Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Lamed Gimel with Aleph, about 10 lines down, with Mar Breid Ravana Amar. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the Breita that they brought yesterday, a Breita that presented us with a number of difficulties. The reason the Gemara brought the Breita down was to show us that Rav Papa Hoderbe, the Rav Papa had retracted his positions in regards to Abba Shaul. Abba Shaul, who had said that the threshold for Isur Truma is Pruta and not Kizayit. Rav Papa had suggested that when Abba Shaul says that, he didn't mean literally just a pruta, he meant a pruta and a kezayit, that it had to match both of those thresholds in order to be chayav. We brought a braita that disproved Rav Papa, and then the Gemara itself says that Rav Papa himself retracted the statement. So we brought this braita over here, and in bringing this braita, we showed how Rav Papa's interpretation or question on the discourse regarding this braita showed that he had changed his mind, and that he clearly believed that Abba Shaul only requires a pruta to be in violation of the Isur of Achilat Truma and not a Kezayit. The Gemara here is going to go back and look at other possible solutions to the Breita. The Breita is the one that we brought, which is Tanya Chata Bishkaga, with regards to Mi'ila. It says there, V'chata Bishkaga Prat L'Mezid. It comes to exclude a case of Mezid. In excluding a case of Mezid, the Gemara asks, why do you have to exclude a case of Mezid? Hello, Kavachomer. It's really a Kavachomer that you can learn out from Chiyuve Karet. When it comes to Chiyuve Karet, B'Shogeg, they bring a Korban Chatat. B'Mezid, they bring nothing. So by Mi'ilah, why wouldn't you say the same thing? Mi'ilah for Shogeg, V'chata B'Shkaga, brings all the prescribed Korbanot, Keren V'Chomesh, all the things that are associated with misappropriation of Hekdesh, B'Shogeg. On the other hand, by Mezid, you would think that it should have the same din as Karet, which is nothing. Yet we have to have a pasuk here teach us that Prat the Mezid. Why? It's a Kavachomer. The Breita said we can undermine that Kavachomer because there's a Tzad Chumra, there's a Tzad of Chomer that's a stringency to the side of Mi'ilah. And that stringency is that Mi'ilah involves Mita Bidei Shemaim, whereas Karet is only Karet. And that's how the Gemara ended. Then we had the discussion about, well, did the Tana change his mind? What does it mean that it's more chamur in terms of mita bidei shamayim? So on and so forth. Now we have two approaches to the Amoraim who really say that, as Rashi says, the Breita mishabeshtahi. The Breita is not clearly redacted. And the question or the reason that we undermine the Kal v'Chomer is not exactly as is written in the Breita, but for another reason. And that is, Mar Breit Devan Amar. Hachikamar. This is what is meant that Mi'ilo is different than other mitzvot, or has a tzad chomer. That is, Iyamart b'shar mitzvot, if you're talking about other mitzvot, shelo asa behen she'ein mitkavein kim mitkavein, that by other mitzvot, when you do not have kavana, you're patur, versus when you're mitkavein, you are chayav. She'im, what's an example of enu mitkavein over here? Now this is interesting because in terms of enu mitkavein, this is really not a case of enu mitkavein. It's more like a case of mitasek, and we're going to see that in a second, and I'll get into more detail to explain that. But she'im nitkaven lachtochet talush, he intended to cut something that was detached. V'chatachet mechubar, and the end, he cut something that is attached. Shepatur, in that case, you're not held liable, because you had intended to do a maase heter. In the end, you end up doing a maase isur. And that's what we call mitasek. Since you are mitasek, you are patur. The Torah tells us that when a person is mitasek, they are patur, and we'll discuss that again in a second, why that is. Tomar b'milah, whereas by milah, sh'nitkaven litchamem b'gizei chulin, he had intended to warm himself up with shearings or fluff that were chulin, nitchamem b'gizei olah. And on the other hand, it turned out that he didn't use shearings that were from chulin, but he rather used shearings from an olah. Shema'al, in that case, you're chayav in mi'ilah. So Rashi explains the difference. That is because by the Gabe Shabbat, when it comes to the Yisurei Shabbat, we have a dispensation called Melechet Machshevet. Melechet Machshevet says that the only way that you're Chayav in Shabbat is if you carry out your intended goal. You have to carry out your intended goal to be Chayav in Shabbat. If you fail in any way to carry out that intended goal, you're Patur. So that's the Patur by Shabbat. With regards to the other mitzvot HaTorah, the Torah says by them, Asher Chataba, that you sinned in it. Prat l'mitasek. That comes to exclude a case where you're not dealing with it, but with something else. And since you're dealing with something else, and you're landed by it, that is patur, that's called mitasek. As opposed to that, by mi'ilah, the pasuk that we quote over here is chata bishkaga. The Gemara says from that, b'chol minei mishkagot. Doesn't matter what type of shkaga, any type of shogeg, means from top to bottom, any type of error, unintentional infraction causes you to be chayav by mi'ilah. So because by mi'ilah there's no mi'ut, there's only an expansive view of what shogeg is, then in any unintentional consequence by mi'ilah, you're going to be chayav. On the other hand, by Shabbat, because you have a requirement of melechet machshevet, and by kol ha'torah kula, you have a p'tur of chata ba, that you have to be chote in the item, or in the Easter itself. If you're not osek in the Easter, then you're not chayav, that's prat mitasek. So you have a dispensation outside of mi'ilah to make mitasek p'tur, whereas by mi'ilah itself, you are chayav. And that's the chomer. The chumrah here is that mi'ilah doesn't have the dispensation of mitasek as opposed to all the other mitzvot ha-Torah. And that's why we undermined the kal v'chomer that we brought, and we need the pasuk to say v'chata bishkaga prat mezid to teach you that when you do it intentionally, you do not bring the korban mi'ilot and you don't pay a keren v'chomesh. Now we have another suggestion. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Hachi Kamar. Again, he has an alternate way to read the end of the Braita. Again, come up with this solution, which is, it should be that Mi'ilah is a chumrah that is not found by other mitzvot. And that is, Im amart b'shar mitzvot, shekein lo mitchayev behen, she'ein mitasek kemitasek. So here, instead of using the word ein mitkaven, he uses the word ein mitasek. So by other mitzvot in the Torah, when you're not mitasek, you don't make him like a mitasek. She mitkaven, lagbia et talush. He intended to pick up something that was detached. And instead he cut something that was attached. So here you have a failure on a number of reasons. Number one is you're not even involved in the process of cutting. You're trying to lift something up. And then the intended object, instead of being talush, is mechubar. So it's even more removed or further removed. So in that case, tobar me'ilah, in a comparable case of me'ilah, shim hoshit yado l'kli litol chefetz, he stuck his hand into a utensil to take something out of it. Sach yado b'shemen shel kodesh, and there happened to be oil of kodesh inside of there, and it gets on his body, and he sach, and he anoints himself with it. Shema'al, in that case, you are mo'el. So here you had no intention for the sicha, and you had no intention to get involved with kodesh, and just by chance, or perchance, when you stuck your hand in there, that's what happens. That's still a problem of mi'ilah. Now, what you have here are two expressions of mitasek. The basic definition of mitasek is that you're engaged in a maase heter. You're doing something that is mutar. But in the end, you end up with something that is asur. So our assumption is that your focus and your intention is for something that's mutar. And by some chance or for some reason, you ended up with the isur, mitasek. You were engaged, you were engrossed in the heter. But you ended up with a situation of isur. If one expression of mitasek, which is nitkaven lachtoch et talush v'chatach et mechubar, you intended to cut something that was detached, and instead you cut something that was attached. The second version of mitasek is a case where he intends to lift something that's talush, and in the end, cut something that is mechubar. So the difference being that in the first case, you're involved in cutting, you just ended up cutting something that was attached instead of detached. In the second case, not only is it the difference between being detached and attached, but you also were not involved in cutting. You were intending to lift, and then you ended up cutting. So these are Torah forms of mitasek, and really is a machloket between Abai and Ravo in the Masechet Kretot. Masechet Kretot, Abai and Ravo argue about what exactly is mitasek. And it turns out that their opinions over here, Marbrei de Ravana and Rav Nachman Yitzchak, basically follow those opinions, with Marbrei de Ravana following the position of Ravo, and Rav Nachman Yitzchak following the position of Abaye, which is, Rava believes, as long as you're not involved in Masi Isur, as long as you're not engaged in doing something wrong, that's called mitasek. You intended to cut something that was detached, you're involved in something that's totally mutar, and you ended up cutting something mechubar, and you ended up in Isur. That's mitasek according to Rava. According to Abaye, if you're involved in cutting, you're still involved in what we call the Masi Isur, because in the end, the Isur was done by cutting. You intended to cut, and you ended up cutting. So you really are involved in the maisei, so you're involved in maisei chaticha, in the cutting. And therefore, in order to be mitasek and to be patur, you have to come up with a case where your initial engagement with the isur was nothing to do with what you ended up with. And that's what we have here by Nachum Bar Yitzchak. That's the case of Edin Itkavin to be magbi at the talush, and he ends up being choteich et a michubar. So those are the difference in opinions about what exactly mitasek is. Within that, there's also a machloket Rashi and Tosafot, a very important machloket here. Rabbeinu Tam makes reference to it over here, But the Tosafot in Shavuot on Daf Yutet is really the one that points out this difference between his opinion and Rashi's opinion, goes into much more detail with it. The key element here is, when I read this over here, you can have two ways to read this mitasek. It says, he intended to cut something that was detached, and he ended up cutting something that was attached. Now, when he cuts the thing that was attached, what is the attached item? Was it the same item that he thought was detached, and instead it turns out to be attached? Or do we say when he cut something, he intended to cut something detached, and he cut something attached, it's a different item, it's a different object? And that's what turns out to be the machloket here between Rashi and Tosafot. Both of the cases here, both by Marbi Revana and Rav Nachum Yitzchak, same as Abayin Rava, you could read the mechubar here as a question of, is the mechubar the same item? You got it wrong. You thought it was talush, turns out to be mechubar. Or, is it really a totally different item? So Rashi says, here I'll lay out the different cases. A person can intend to either cut something that's mechubar, he can intend to cut something that's talush, or you can intend to pick up something that's talush. Those are the three possibilities that he can interact with this item on Shabbat. In the end, it could turn out to be that he cut this item that was mechubar, or he could end up cutting something else that was mechubar. According to Rashi, the cases in which you're considered to be a shogeg are a case where you intended to cut something mechubar, and that item was mechubar. This same item was mechubar, you didn't know it was Shabbat. Or you didn't know that this melacha was asur. That's a case of shogeg, number one. Number two case of shogeg, according to Rashi, if you intend lachtoch et talush, and then you cut this item, and it turns out to be mechubar. The same item turns out to be mechubar. According to Rashi, that's called shogeg, and you're chayav. So where's the case of mitasek? According to Rashi, the case of mitasek is, when you intend lachtoch et talush, you intend to cut something that's talush, v'chatach mechubar acher. And you cut something that was mechubar, but it was another item. The object changed. So for Rashi, in order to be mitasek, not only does the activity that you were engaged in originally have to be an activity that is mutar, I mean, according to Rava, it means that chatichat talush, or according to Abaye, it means hakbat talush, but you also have to change the object on which the iser is done. So you need both of them to change. You need to have the maseh be a maseh heter, and the object that you intended for change. And that's when you get to a case of mitasek. That's according to Rashi. Now, there's an exception to that rule. According to Rashi, the one exception to that rule is when zenene, when you get hana from it. And that is the principle that kol mitasek bechalavim varayot, that by cases of chalavim varayot, where you get hana from it, hana undermines this whole concept of mitasek. Because the hana makes it as if you were mitkavein, as if you intended for the end result, even though you weren't really intending for it. So in a case where you have a piece of shuman in front of you and a piece of chelev in front of you, and you had intended for the shuman, you had intended for the kosher chelev, and then you end up picking up the chelev of isur, so over there you're going to be patur because that is a case of mitasek. You had intended to do something totally mutar, which was eat shuman, and in the end you ate something that was chelev. So normally, if it was just mitasek, it'd be patur. But because this is chaylev over here, and shekeinene, you get hana from it, you will be chayav, despite the fact that if it was just plain mitasek, you would have been patur. Tosafot, on the other hand, and you can see it in the Rabbeinu Tam here, Rabbeinu Tam in the Tosafot, kavin nachtoch et talush v'chatachat mechubar, Rabbeinu Tam says one little thing, omer rabbeinu mefresh, nimtza shemechu mechubar, and you found it was attached, the same object. So for Tosafot, the only thing to be mitasek means that the maseh has to be a maseh heter. You intended for a maseh heter, and it turns out to be a maseh isur. The object does not need to change. And therefore, according to Tosafot, in the cases that we mentioned before, if you're nitkavin lachtoch et talush, and it turns out that it itself was mechubar, that's mitasek, and you're patur. Nitkavin lachbiat et talush, you intended to pick up something that was talush, and it ends up that item was mechubar and you cut it, that's mitasek according to Abaye. That's the cases of mitasek. So for Tosafot, you don't have to change the object. For Rashi, you do have to change the object in order for it to be classified as mitasek. If you look at the Rambam seems to follow, according to the Aruch Lener, and it seems from the Rambam himself that he seems to follow the Shita of Rashi as well. The reason Tosafot doesn't like Rashi's Shita is because we have the Ptur of Melechet Machshevet by Shabbat. And so why do you need the Ptur of Melechet Machshevet if everything's already mitasek? And so Tosafot says, when the object or the intended object changes, that's Melechet Machshevet in Shabbat. So that turns out that if you intended to cut something that was attached, and you cut another object that was attached, you're patur on Shabbat, because that's Melechet Machshevet. You didn't get the item that you intended. You didn't reach the intended goal that you had wanted. So Melachet Machshevet already makes you patur when you're dealing with the change in the object. For instance, the Gemara says, if you intended to light one candle, and you end up lighting a different candle, so you lit something, but you just lit a different candle, the object of the Melacha was not what you intended, that is Melachet Machshevet, and you will not be chayav for that on Shabbat. Because Shabbat requires that you have Melachet Machshevet, which is that the intended Milacha, the intended action, is what you wanted, plus the intended result is also what you want. And if there's any failure along that way, it lacks a melechet machshevet, and you will not be chayav for that on Shabbat. Mit'asek makes you patur, even when the object doesn't change. It's when your machshava was carried out. It just turns out that you were engaged in what you thought was heter, and it ended up being yisur. But the object itself, the intended object, is what happened. So in this case, your machshava was carried out. So as far as Shabbat is concerned, you would be chayav, because your intended object and your intended goal was carried out. The only reason you're put over here is because of mitasek. So this is a case where melech machshevet is not relevant, but mitasek is relevant, because you intended to cut this object, and you did cut this object. That was your intention on Shabbat. So with regards to Shabbat, you would be chayav. The only thing that is poter you over here is mitasek, because you were engaged in an activity that was what you thought was heter, and for some reason it ended up being asur. And that's why Tosafot differs from Rashi and but seemingly the Rambam in this issue. The Chatam Sofer, in discussing this about why Rashi took up this opinion, says that even within mitasek, you could have the possibility of melechet machshevet being brought in as a ptur. And that's why maybe Rashi disagrees with Tosafot, which is in times of cases of neheneh, the cases of hana'ah, where generally by hana'ah we say there's no concept of mitasek, nevertheless, melech machshevet might help you out. So for instance, if you're violating the Shabbat by lighting a candle, or you're taking something out in your mouth, and you get hana'ah from that, so then generally you wouldn't have the Torah mitasek, but on Shabbat you would get melech machshevet. So the Chatam Sofer points out that Rashi can come up with instances where Melechet Machshevet is relevant even within the cases of Mitasek, and that's why he doesn't separate between the two, as opposed to Tosafot, who does separate between the two. The last thing that's very interesting about this topic is the Reb Kiva Eger. In the Reb Kiva Eger, in talking about Shugeg and then talking about Mitasek, points out that he thinks that the Ptur of Mitasek is simply that. It's a Ptur. It says that you're Ptur and you don't have to bring a Korban. It's Ptur and you don't have any punishment assigned to it. But that does not mean that it's not a Maisa Aveiro. He says in the end, what you did was an action that is an Aveiro. Ijus are not held culpable for that action because of the unintended nature of it, or because the Torah tells you that it's excluded from the punishment. But that doesn't mean what you did was not wrong. It means that what you did was wrong, it's just that we're not going to hold you culpable for it. And that obviously has nafkaminot in terms of how we view this Maisa. We view it as a Masa Aveira versus a Masa of Heter. And that would deal with certain things like obligations for you. If you have a servant that you are obligated on Shabbat to separate from violations of Shabbat, would you have to separate him from something that's Mitasek? He's doing something where he doesn't know that the Masa is going to be a Masa Isur because he thinks it's a Masa Heter. It's Mitasek. So for him, personally, he has no culpability. But for you as the owner of this Eved, with the knowledge that he's doing something that could be a Maase Issur, do you have to separate him? And Reb Eger says yes, because it's a Maase Aveira, and therefore you must separate him from this action or this activity. So again, in the end here, what you have here in the presentation of Rav Anna and Rav Nachman Yitzchok is the two presentations of what could be Mitasek. You have Rava's Mitasek, which is simply, you intended to cut Talush, you ended up cutting Mechubar, the equivalent of which in Mi'ilah means you intended to take wool of Chulin and you ended up taking wool of an Olah. In that case, in Shabbat, you're Patur, in Mi'ilah, you're Chayav. Whereas by Rav Nachman Yitzchak, he takes a bias approach to Mitasek, which is not only does it have to be that you are not reaching the intended objective or object, but it also has to be that you're not engaged in the activity at all. So it can't be that you're cutting something that's Talush. It has to be that you're not cutting at all. So therefore, it's Nitan Lak Bia to Talush, and then you end up putting the Mechubar, which the equivalent case in Mi'ilah would be that you stick your hand into the utensil to take something out of it, and it turns out there's oil of hektesh in there, something that had nothing to do with what your intended action was, and you end up with the benefit of having the oil on you. By Mi'ilah, you're chayav. By Shabbat, you'd be patur. And that's the chumrah of Mi'ilah. Since Mi'ilah has that chumrah, we can't extrapolate from other dinim to Mi'ilah, and that's why the pasuk has to tell us, chata bishkaga, only bishogeg are you chayav, prat the mezid, mezid is patur. You don't have this prescription of the korban and the keren v'chomesh. Right, now back in the Gemara. The Gemara goes back to a braita that we saw on Amud Aleph in yesterday's daf, which is Amar Mar, Bameh Dvarim Amurim. In the braita of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and Rabbi Akiva, they had a machloket about whether we look at damim or we look at midah when it comes to compensation with regards to truma. So in that machloket, the braita said that when is that true? B'mafrish truma v'achmitza. Their whole discussion revolves around truma that was taken off, and after it was truma, it became chametz. Avachrish chametz truma. If the item was already chametz, and now he wants to be mafrish truma from the item, divrei hako ein kadosha. Everybody agrees that it's not kadosh. Now, the everybody over here, as Tosafot points out, is only relevant to one person, and that's Rabbi Yossi Aglili. According to everybody else, besides Rabbi Yossi Aglili, chametz is asur behana on Pesach. It's asur b'achila, it's asur behana. So if you ask me, can you be mafrish truma from chametz? The answer is obviously no, because what are you going to do? You're going to be mafrish truma. It has to be something that is ra'oi liot kodesh. It has to be something that is ra'oi kodesh to be truma, to be eaten, or to get hana for the kohen. And since chametz has neither of those, there's no way you can make it into truma. So because of that, all the other tana'im basically don't need this. The one tana that does need this is Rabbi Yosef Glil, who says that chametz is muter behana. Well, if it's muter behana, I would think you could be mafrish the truma from the chametz. You give it to the kohen, and he'll burn it. Tachat tavshilo. He'll get hana from it. So you can be mafrish the truma. So menahani mile. How do we know that that's not the case, or you're not allowed to do this according to Rabbi Yosef Glili? Menahani mile either could be the Gemara is asking the question, or it could be Rav Nachman Yitzchak himself asking the question. He knows he has the limud here, and he wants to show what the limud connects to here. So it's menahani mile. Yom Rav Nachman Yitzchak amakra titein lo, which is reshit de gantcha titein lo, that you have to give the truma to the kohen, and we dash from titein lo velo le oro. You have to give it to him and not to his fire. So giving it to him and not to his fire means that you give it to him so he can eat it, not that he can burn it. And so therefore, even according to Rabbi Yosef Glili, who says that chametz is mutar ba'ana on Pesach, you cannot give that to the kohen because you're not going to get it to a kohen to eat. The only thing you can do with it is burn it, and that does not meet the basic requirements of what truma is. Meitiv Rav Huna Breidri Abshu Ein Tormim Minat Meya L'Tohra. You're not allowed to be mafrish truma tmeya for truma tohra. So if you have tevel that is tamei and tevel that is tohor, you cannot then go take the tevel that's tamei and be mafish the truma from the tevel tamei on behalf of the tevel tohor to take the truma for both of them from that which is tamei. Vim taram. But if he does do it, b'dievid, b'shogeg, trumato truma, it works. V'amai. Why don't you have the same requirement that we have by chametz, which is lema lo v'lo do'oro? The only thing that truma tamei is good for is to burn. So why don't we have that same requirement over here by truma tamei to say lo v'lo do'oro? That you have to be mafrish something that's good for the eating of the kohen, not something that he's going to burn under his tavshil. If that's the case, why are you allowed to be mafrish at all from trumat meah? Or really, tevel tamei to make it into trumat meah. Gemara says, lokasha. Hotam aita lashat kosher. Hochalo aita lashat kosher. By trumat meah, at one point, it could have been trumat tehora. It's now tmeah. So then, in that case, it was once good, and now it went bad. On the other hand, when it comes to chametz was always bad. It was never at a point that it could have been truma because it was always chametz. Now, that's a very interesting question. I know you're jumping in to ask the question. Wait a minute. You could come up with the same scenario by chametz as you come up with truma tmeya. It could have been. It was fine beforehand and it became chametz later. Why do you have to say that? That's exactly what the Gemara asks. Delaita l'shata kosher echidami. What does exactly that mean that it never had a shata kosher by chametz? I'll give you the example. Dachmitz b'mechubar. It became chametz while it was still attached on the ground to the ground. I mean, once an item is attached to the ground, you're not chayav in truma. So as long as it's attached to the ground, you're not chayav in truma, because until it's dagan, until it reaches the point dagan, dagan means to pile it in the kri, to reach the point of gemar melocha. So in that case, that's when you become chayav in truma. So if it already became chametz prior to that point, then it never had a shata kosher. Aval achmitz betalush, eino chanami. If it became chametz when it was detached already, when it was already chayav in truma, achinami dekotcha, it would work. The answer in the gemara, basically in the end, is Enochanami, Truma Tmeya and Chametz are not different. It's just a question of what the case is. Now, the key difference between Chametz and Tmeya, I said they're exactly alike, but they're not exactly alike, because the difference being that something cannot become Tmei until it's detached. Since it can't become Tmei until it's detached, by definition, the item will have to be detached before it becomes Tmei. On the other hand, by Chametz, something can be Chametz while it's still attached, and so because of that, there is a possibility of precluding it from ever reaching a point of Talush where it wasn't a Chametz. So because of that, there's a difference between chametz and tmeya, where chametz will never have a point of shata kosher, while truma tmeya will always have shata kosher, and that is because it can never become tmeya, while it's mechubar, it can only become tmeya once it's talush. No, the kernels reach a point where they break open. And once they break open, if water gets inside of them, they can be machmit. So that's the case. It's a case where it's still in the ground and the kernels have broken open. You'd have to leave them there for, you know, enough time that they break open. Most times they're harvested before they crack open. But in general, you have that problem. If you have kernels and they get water on them, you have a problem of chametz. You're not allowed to have water on the kernels at all. So why should it make a difference if they're detached or attached? All right, so then Amar Lei, you're right. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok says to Rav Huna Bar Yehuda Yehoshua, you're right. The conclusion that you just drew is the correct conclusion, which is that what I'm explaining to you, or this din that I'm explaining to you, the difference between Trumat Me'ah and Trumat Chameit has to do with this issue of Shata Kosher. And Ein Hochanami, if Chameit looks like Trumat Me'ah, then it also would not be problematic to be Mafrish from the Chameit if it was Achmitz B'talush, just like it is by Trumat Me'ah. So he says, B'gzirat Irin Pitgama. Ooh, the bet is not found in the pasuk there, and the aleph is also silent in the pasuk in Daniel, which is a meimar kadishin she'elta. That's to do with the dreams of the kings of Babel that are being interpreted by Daniel. Over there, in saying that, he says, "Bezeirat irin pitgama," that this came by the decree of the watchers, umeimar kadishim she'elta, and by the word of the holy ones, it has been sentenced. Meaning that this is the stamp of exactly what's going to happen. And that's what he says now. You're right. The way that you explained it now is the correct understanding of this. And that is the way that in the Beit Midrash, they paskin because this is the correct understanding. So it's as if it's a decree, as if it is a sentence from above. Rashi says here, from the Malachim above, from the angels above, but the angels here referring to the Talmid Chachamim. As if the Talmid Chachamim have given their approval to this and agree with this understanding. Basically, you're mitkaven to what the halacha is, which is, that's how they paskin like me in the Beit Midrash, which is exactly this difference or this concept of talush versus mechubar. Or the difference of basically being that it has a shata kosher and not a shata kosher. Kiata Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua Amar, he offers an alternative as to why you cannot be mafrish truma from chametz. Amar kra, reshit. Reshit dagancha. It should be the first of your dagan. And based on that, we need shishiyareha nikarim liYisrael. That means that the leftovers are good for a regular Yisrael, meaning that it has value to him, or it's changed now in its status. You have tevel, which is asur, and when you're mafish the truma, that whatever's left behind is now mutar. So taking off the truma has to do something to make the residual better than it was before. So in the case where it's chametz beforehand, and then afterwards you're mafish the truma, what you end up with is an item that is no different than it was before. Tevel is asur be'achila and mutar behana. So now after I'm afish the truma, at least according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili again, then I'm afish the truma, whatever's left over is still asur be'achila because it's chametz and mutar behana. So what have I done? By taking off the truma, I've done nothing to benefit that which the residual. The residual was no better off now than it was before. So being afish the truma did nothing. And that's what the problem is over here. Because the reshit, or the pasuk of reshit, requires us that now that you've done something to call truma, that the residual also has something done to it that makes it better off or changed from what it was before. Although Tosafot does point out that the nature of the hana'ah does change. Because when it comes to hana'ah by tevel, you can only use hana'ah that she'eno kilui. You can only have hana'ah that is not destructive in nature. As opposed to the hana'ah from chametz, which you can even get hana'ah shel kilui, you can burn it to use it under tachshilo. So Tosafot wants to suggest over here that dafka betevel tamei ein madlikin. Then maybe it's only true by Tevel Tamei that you can't be Madlik. But if you have Tevel Tahor, then maybe you could be Maklikin and you could get Hanash Shel Kilui from it. So therefore, in that case, there wouldn't be any change. But based on this, the fact is that there's no change between the Tevel to the Chametz, and that's why you can't be Mafrish Truma Shel Chametz, according to Rabbi Yosef Glili, who says it's Mutar Behana'ah. And the only thing Rabbi Kiv Eger points out about this, he has a little difficulty with the whole thing, is that this has nothing to do with Trumat Chametz, it has to do with the Shiarim. I mean, whether the Trumat is Chametz or not is irrelevant over here. It only has to do with what's left over. So it turns out if the Trumat wasn't Chametz and the leftovers were Chametz, you'd have the same problem. He points out that it's a slight difficulty in this explanation, which is the focus is no longer on the Trumat, the focus is on the residual, that which is not Trumat, and that needs to be Chametz. Okay, Yotiv Rav Acha Bar Rav Avya, Kamed Rav Chista, Yotiv Amar Mishmed Rav Yochanan. It's the name of Yochanan. Navim Shinit Me'u. If you have grapes that became tamei. So now, if grapes are tamei, if you're going to put them into the press, and press out the wine's not going to become tamei. And you're going to have to be mafrish truma. From that, you end up with truma tameya. So that's not a good situation. How do I, when I have these anavim that are tameim, how can I work them through the press without causing a problem of tuma? The answer is, dochan pachot pachot mi kebeitza. You press them less than a kebeitza at a time. Ve'yanam kasher nesachim. And the wine that comes out of there is kosher to be used on the mizbeach for nesachim. That's how tahor it is over here. Alma. From this you must conclude, kasavar mashkin mifkad kide. The liquid inside of the grape is encapsulated inside of the grape and stored inside of the grape. So let's understand what's going on over here. There are a number of alochot that we need to know. One is with regards to tumat ochlim. By tumat ochlim, ochel, food items that are tamei, everybody agrees that they can only convey tuma if they're the size of a kabeitza. They have to be the size of a kabeitza in order to convey tuma. If they are less than the size of a kabeitza, they cannot convey tuma. That's number one. There is a machloket, and the Rabbeinu Tam mentions it over here, as to whether to accept tuma, ochel needs to be the size of a kabeitza or not. Rashi vacillates throughout Shas. In a number of places he says yes, in a number of places he says no. Sometimes he says it does require a kabeitza to be kabel tuma. Other places he says it doesn't require. The Rabbeinu Tam is of the opinion that it always requires a kabeitza, both to convey tuma and to accept tuma. Most of the Rishonim follow the approach that to accept tuma it only has to be a koshu, convey tuma it has to be a kabeitza. Okay, this will come up in the sugya. I'll show you why it's relevant in a minute. That's number one. Number two is liquid. The liquid inside of the grape. How you view the liquid inside the grape will have a major nafkamina here. If the liquid is part and parcel of the grape, then when the grape became tamei, the liquid inside also became tamei. They're inseparable. They're one item. And if they're one item, the grape is tamei. The liquid inside of it is a part of the grape. It's also tamei. Versus, if you view the liquid inside of the grape as being a separate entity, it's basically liquid that's encapsulated inside of the grape. Then, just because the grape comes to May does not mean that the liquid becomes to May. Even though the grape is touching the liquid, that's not sufficient. Because as Rashi points out, the liquid doesn't get a shem mashkeh till it exits the grape. So until it's pressed out of the grape, it doesn't have a shem mashkeh. So while it's inside the grape, it's basically protected. It's encapsulated and protected, and it cannot become to May because it's separate from the grape. So what the suggestion of Rabbi Yochanan over here is, if you take less than a kabeitza worth of grapes, and you begin to press them, then, by the time the liquid comes out of the grape, the liquid being, again, separate from the grape, so it didn't become tamei when the grapes came tamei, the tamei grapes here cannot be tamei the liquid. Because in order to convey tuma, an ochel needs a kabeitza. So once you started to press them, they're less than a kabeitza. And so the liquid that's there has nothing to make it tamei, because there's no object there that can make it tamei. Even though liquids are mekabel tumei b'mashu. But since the ochel is not sufficient size to convey tuma, that's why it's fine over here. That is the position of Rabbi Yochanan. No, because that we know, first of all, the press, it might be mechuber de karka. The press itself might be attached to the ground, so it's not mekabel tuma. Even if it's not mechuber de karka, if you remember from earlier in the Masechta, we know that an ochel cannot convey tuma to a kli. A kli can only accept tuma from an ava tuma. It cannot accept tuma from a rishon tuma. And the maximum level of ochel is a rishon tuma. So an ochel cannot convey tuma to a kli, and therefore the gat remains tahor. So the gat is tahor. The liquids remain tahor. The only thing that's tamei was the ochel, the grape itself. And the grape itself, once you've pressed it, you brought it below the threshold where it can convey tuma. So don't have any problem with tuma over here. I mean, you could eat the grape, but the problem is here, the problem of tevel and truma, which is that if you do it from the grapes, then you're going to be mafrish truma from an item that is tamei. But when it comes to the liquid, which is the main point of what you want to do here, you want to be mafrish something from these items themselves. Or you mafish the truma from itself, how can you do it to end up with truma tehora? If you use the grapes themselves and you're mafish, you're going to end up with truma tmeya. How do I get to a point where it's truma tehora? I press the grapes, so I move them to a object that is tahor now. And once it's a tahor object, now I can be mafish the truma from something that's tahor. And that's a much better outcome, where I have truma tehora versus truma tmeya. So that's the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Now, he's going to explain that position. Ba'emat kamitame. When does the liquid become tamei? After you press them, when you squeeze out the liquid. At the point that you're squeezing them out, you're below a kabeitza. You're below a kabeitza of ochel, and therefore cannot kibei tuma. So if that's the case, kabeitza nami. Why do you have to start out with less than a kabeitza? You should be able to start out with exactly a kabeitza. If you start out with exactly a kabeitza, the moment you start to press it, it's going to drop below a kabeitza. The first drop of liquid that comes out already takes the grape below a kabeitza. So why are you suggesting, or Rabbi Yochanan's suggesting, you can only do this less than a kabeitza at a time? You should be able to do it at a kabeitza at a time. V'hatanan, we have a Mishnah that in Ta'arot that actually says this, which is Tamei Meit. Here, instead of the grapes being Tamei, the individual is pressing them is Tamei. Shesachat Zeitim. He's pressing olives, Vanavim, or grapes, Kebetza Mikuvenet. There's exactly a Kebetza of Ocho there. Tehorim. They are Tehor. So now, in the case here is where the Tamei Meit person brings the grapes or the olives to the press. So in bringing the grapes and the olives to the press, he's mitame the grape or the olive. So they are tameim. Now he wants to press them. If he puts in exactly a kabetza into the press and starts to press them, the liquid that comes out now will not come into contact with him because he'll make sure not to touch the liquid. He'll put on a board and he'll stand on top of the board and press them. So he's not in direct contact with the liquid. Now it's particular why he used tamei meit is because tamei meit is a kind of tuma that's only conveyed through maga. That's only through contact. It doesn't have what's called tumat heset, if you move another object, or it doesn't have tumat midras. So if there was tumat midras or tumat heset, like you have by Azav, this wouldn't work. But in this case, because he's only tamei meit, and the tumat is only conveyed through maga, through contact, what he could do is take a shute kliets, a flat piece of wood that's not mekabel tuma, and he'll put it on top of these grapes, on top of these olives, and he'll stand on it, and he'll press them. So then from the moment the liquid exits these items, he's not in contact with the liquid. What if the fact that it's in contact with grapes or the olives themselves that are tameim? This is a case where he did exactly a kabetza. Since he did exactly a kabetza, from the moment he starts to press, the first drop of liquid's out, he has less than a kabetza, and that ochel cannot be mitameh, the liquids. So you see over there in the Mishnah and Tarot, you can even start with exactly a kabetza. Why are we starting below that? So Gemara gives a very interesting answer. Hatam diavad. Over there in the case of Tarot, that's a case where he didn't come to ask us a question. This is what he did. And now we have to paskin the halacha. So over there, if he did a kabetza or less, then you're right. He's okay. Hocha lechatchila. Over here, Rabbi Yochanan's suggestion is he's coming to ask us what to do. And we're telling him what to do. Because Zera, Duma, Atta, maybe the Yotam kabetza. We don't want him to get to that line of risk. If you tell him to take a kabetza, you're at a very, very fine line. If it's above a kabetza, you have tamei. Below a kabetza, it's fine. So exactly a kabetza is also fine. If you tell him to get to exactly a kabetza, he's risking being over the threshold. So we say, do less than a kabetza at a time. So we have no questions over here. We don't have any possibility of getting over the line or the threshold. That's Rabbi Yochanan's position. Amalei Rav Chista. Rav Chista said to Rav Acha bar Rav Avya, who quoted this in the name of Rav Yochanan, Man tzayit l'cha or Rav Yochanan Rabach. Nobody would listen. Nobody's going to listen to you or Rav Yochanan your Rebbe. What you just said is completely wrong. V'chi tuma shebehen l'heichan halcha. Where did this tuma go? The grape was tamei, and now you're telling me the tuma disappeared? The grape is one solid entity. It has the grape and the liquid inside of it. The grape's tamei, the liquid's tamei. Alma kasavar. From this, you can conclude that Rav Chista must believe mashkin mivla blie. The liquids inside of the grape are part and parcel of the grape. They are absorbed or contained within the grape. And since they are part and parcel of the grape, they are considered to be one entity. They're one entity. When the grape comes tamei, so does the liquid. And if the liquid becomes tamei inside of the grape, doesn't matter when you press it out what the size of the grape is. At that point in time, the liquid's already tamei. And liquid will remain tamei. You can't get rid of that tuma. So that's the difference in opinion. This difference in opinion leads to the different conclusion. If you believe mivla blie, if you believe that the liquids are a part and parcel of the grape and they're one entity, then the liquids are tamei, and you can't make or have the solution of doing it less than a kabetz at a time because the liquids are already tamei. And then if you believe that the liquids are mifkad pkide, that they're simply encapsulated and stored inside the grape, then you can have the solution of doing it less than a kabetz at a time because the liquids remain tahor until they exit the grape. And the point to exit the grape, you have less than a kabetz of ochlim that cannot be mitamei the liquid. I'll just point out that there's somewhat of a stira minei oved. You're internally inconsistent over here because the Gemara is counting the liquid towards the size of the grape of a kabetz. On the other hand, they're saying that the liquid is a separate entity from the grape. So Rashi points this out and says, yes, ein ochanami. Because while it's inside the grape, even though it's mifkad pakid, it still gives heft to the grape and the size of the grape. So the grape is considered to be, or when you measure the kabetz of the grape, it includes the liquid that is inside of it. Even though that liquid is mifkad and considered to be separate. So that's an interesting dichotomy within this liquid over here. But Rashi points out that we see that in other cases. For instance, if you have a piece of chalev or a piece of meat that's not kosher, and then it gets rained on, or water gets into it, and the water is soaked into it, so it expands to the point where it's the size of a kazayit. If you eat that meat right now, that would be asur. That meat would be asur, because it has the size of a kazayit. Even though the contributing factor to being a kazayit is the fact that it has water in it. That still makes it into a kazayit, and it's a sur. On the other hand, if you were to squeeze the meat and squeeze the water out of the meat, the water itself would not be a sur. The water would be a separate entity and remains a separate entity, would not be a sur. So Rashi says we see this consistently in halacha, that when the item is absorbed entirely inside the object, it counts towards the heft or the size of the object. But that doesn't mean that the liquid itself or what's contained inside of it takes on the properties of the object. It's still considered to be a separate entity and does not take on the properties of the object. Now, he explains his position, Rav Kista, which is, V'kevan dit melei uchla it melei mashkim. Since the grape itself became tamei, so too do the mashkim become tameim at the same time, because they're one entity. So, amalei. So now, Rav Acha Bar Avya says back to Rav Kista, V'at lo tizbera, the mashkim mifkad p'kidei. You don't believe that liquids inside of the grape are simply encapsulated, stored in there, not part and parcel of the grape. That's not. What are you going to do with the Mishnah from Tarot about Tamei Meit? Tamei Meit, Shesachat Zeitim Va'anavim, Mikuvenet Kebeitza Tehorim. So I can explain that. Yeah, Mart Bishlama Mifkat Pkidei, if you say that the liquids are simply stored inside the grape and not part and parcel of it, Shumachi Tehorim. That's why when he steps on them, they're Tahor, because he can press them without touching the liquid, and the liquid can remain Tahor because the ochel is below a kabeitza. If you say that the liquids are part and parcel of the grape, they're one entity, when the tamei mate touched the grape, he made the liquids inside also tamei. And wait, you misunderstood. That's not the reasoning in that case. The reasoning in that case is, we're talking about grapes that were not mukhsharim the kabel tumah. Mukhsharim to kabel tumah means they were not washed. A liquid did not come over them yet to the point where it allows them or primes them to be mekabel tumah. So it's lacking that. Le'emat mitkashrei. So then when are they going to have that hechsher of the kabel tumah? V'chisachidu. When you start to press them. The first time they're going to come into contact with the liquid is when you press them. Their own liquid. Their own juice is what's going to be makshir them. V'chisachidu batzilu shi'ura. And when he starts to press them, they're going to be below the shi'ur. Means that they're less than a kabeitza. So over here, Rabbeinu Tam says, wait a minute, I don't understand this concept here. If you say that Ochlim can only convey Tumah b'kabeitza, but they accept Tumah even in a koshahu, then I have a problem. Mikan makshir Rabbeinu Tam, the perish of kuntris. The perish of koshu mikabel Tumah min haTorah. The min haTorah, Ochlim can be mikabel even with a koshu. Tahach hi nafik min purta. As soon as a little bit comes out of it, mit kashrei, then it's mukshar the kabel Tumah. Because mashkim are considered to be one entity with the grape. And as soon as you're makshir it, then even though the ochel is less than a kabeitza, you, according to you, Rashi, less than a kabeitza is ready and available to accept tumah. So if that's the case, then the tumah should be conveyed to the ochel now, and then the ochel will convey that tumah back or make the whole thing or the whole item tamei. Because the sum total of the liquid and the grape together, when you hold that it's mible blie, will add up to a beitza, and they will be able to convey tumah to the residual ochel that would have separated out from the mashkeh now, and that will make this residual ochel, which can accept tumah of less than a kabeitza, tamei. Why is that not the case over here? It must be, as the Rabbeinu Tam says, that ochel can only be mekabel tumah with a kabeitza. So from here, Rabbeinu Tam says that you have to have a kabeitza of size to accept tumah. And that's why over here, when you start, the tamei mate starts to press the grape, it's going to drop below a kabeitza. So not only can it not convey tumah, it cannot accept tumah anymore. Since it can't accept tumah anymore, that's why everything remains tahor over here. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam learns, and that's why he criticizes Rashi's position. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef tirates. Rabbi Yosef is mitarates on behalf of Rashi, but also the Balei Tosfot who disagree with Rabbeinu Tam. Which is the afa pisha ochel mekabel tumah bepachot mikabeitza. Even though food is mekabel tumah with less than a kabeitza, ain mekabel hechsher pachot mikabeitza. To be mukshar the kabel tumah, something has to be the size of a kabeitza. Hechsher the kabel tumah only works when you have something that's the size of a kabeitza. And that's why over here that's not working. There is no hechsher the kabel tumah here because as soon as you begin to press the item, it goes below a kabeitza. And therefore can no longer be mukshar the kabel tumah. You cannot have a makshar the kabel tumah. If it's not mukshar the kabel tumah, it can't accept tumah. So why is that? Because the din is learnt out of mikola ochel asher ye achel. From every food asher ye achel that you eat or that you consume. The Gemara in Yuma in the last parak in Yoma tells us that what is the size of an item that a person can eat and put into his beta bli a swallow in one shot? That's the size of kebeitza tanagol. That's the size of a beitza. So mikola ochel asher ye achel, that's what's teaching us According to Rashi, what can convey Tuma, and also the din of Heksha, the Kabul Tuma, because that Parsha in Vayikra, which we did earlier in the Masechta in Rav Chanina Skanakonim, Kolocha Asher Yeachel is also teaching us about how you get to Buksha, the Kabul Tuma. So over there, it's talking about that is the minimum size. Kabetz is the minimum size for Heksha, the Kabul Tuma. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, the reason that it works over here is because Ochel is not Mekabul Tuma when it's less than a Kabetz. According to Rashi and the Balei Tosfot, Rabbeinu Yosef, the reason here is because there's no Heksher, the Kabul Tuma, less than a Kabetza. Now, Gemara says, D'ilo Temahochi. Now, Rav Chista says back to Rav Acha by Rav Avya, if you don't agree with me, you're going to run into a big problem. And that is, Hadetanya, the bright that we had on yesterday's daf, the machlok between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Halamad ze domet. Rabbi Kiva says in the end, you know what Chametz is similar to when you have Chumat Chametz? That's similar to Chumat Tutim v'anavim shenitma'a. That's similar to the chuma of tutim and anavim that became tmeim. Because Rabbi Kiva says, what are you going to do with them? In lo heter achila, you can't eat them because it's chuma tmeah. Velo heter asakan, you can't use them to burn or as fuel because they don't act as fuel. They're an extinguisher. They're not a fuel. So then you have no option here. You can't do anything with them. So that's similar to what chametz. Chametz is asur b'achila, asur b'hana'a. So too are these tutim and anavim. But Rav Chista says back to Rav Acha b'Avya, ha heter achila nama itbe. I can come up with a heter achila. Based on your position, you can come up with a heter achila. Dibai darchlu pachot pachot mikabetza. You have a way to make these juices that come out of these tutim and anavim tahor by simply pressing them less than a kabetza at a time. For me, Rav Chista says, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem because I don't have this idea that it's bifkat pkite. My belief, it's mivle blie. If it's mivle blie, then when the item became tutim and anavim became tameh, then the liquid inside is tameh. So there's nothing to discuss over here. And then, based on your position, why does Rabbi Akiva say, lo heter achila, lo heter anah? There is a heter achila. Just press them less than a kebetz at a time, and now you end up with Truma Torah. So Amarova, gezeira dilma ati behu de deg takala. Rabbi says, we don't want you keeping them around. Press them and to work with them, because it may end up with a takala. The takala is that you might eat them. You might eat them. You might eat the juices. You might do it more than kebetza. There are a lot of chances of foul-ups in this case, because you're keeping around Truma Tmeya, and that's very risky. Chumat Tmeah can be used in certain ways. It can be burnt, or it can be utilized here in less than kabetz at a time. But in order to do that, you have to keep it around. And by keeping it around, you're putting at risk that someone's going to eat it. And we don't want that. Do we really worry about this idea that people are going to make a mistake about eating it? If you have bread of chumah that became tameh, or you have shemen of chumah that became tameh, if either of those items, we keep them around, you're allowed to burn them. There's no way you're going to burn them all in one shot. It's going to take time to burn them. And we don't worry about the fact that you might eat the shemen. We don't worry about the fact you might eat the bread. How come? So Amalei, Rava says, no problem. Pat, zarek lo ben etzim. The bread, he throws them into the wood pile. So he ruins the bed, so it's no longer something that people would eat. It's ma'us now. Shemen shel truma, rami lebe kli ma'us. This is what he said earlier in the Masechta as well. The shemen, he puts into a utensil that is disgusting. It's disgusting to the point where it makes it inedible at this point. So it's inedible, but yet you could still use it for truma tmeya. So you do something to the truma tmeya to make it or put it into a category, it won't be eaten anymore. Therefore, that's why by pat and shemen you can do this. By tutim and anavim, there's no way to do that. Because if you make them ma'us, then how are you going to ever get out the truma tahorah? The only way to get the truma tahorah out of there is to press them for food. If you make them ma'us, nobody's going to eat them. They're not going to press them for the food. So that suggestion won't work by the tutim and anavim, but it will work by the pat and the shemen. Kufa. Now we want to discuss this idea. Mandikim bepat b'shemen shel truma shenitmei. By amar mishmei dechizkiyah. Rava Amar Debe Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Marta Amravuna Lo Shanu El Pat. That's only true if it's bread. Aval Chite Lo. But if it's kernels, wheat kernels, then no. Shema Yavoba Enli De Takala. Because wheat kernels, you could have a problem with people eating them or utilizing them. They're going to stick around for a long time. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilu Chite. Rabbi Yochanan says even the wheat kernels, you can keep them around and you can burn them. You can use them for firewood. Vamai Nichlus Duma Atibel Enli De Takala. The position of Rava and Abayi seems to make sense. When there's no takala problem, like bread, where you throw it in, it's ma'us, nobody's going to eat it anymore, I understand. By wheat kernels, where it's not going to become ma'us, then you shouldn't be able to keep them around, like the tutim and anavim before. Taka Rabbi Yochanan over here say, no, you can keep the wheat kernels around. Kedama Ravashi, Ravashi says that when Rabbi Yochanan speaking over here is bishlikuta mi'usta, case where they boiled, they cooked the kernels already, and now they're ma'us. They're ma'us because they were cooked up already, and if you throw them into the firewood or something like that, they become disgusting and nobody would eat them. So it's a case where you've already softened the kernels to the point where they become disgusting if you throw them in, and then you can use them for fuel because nobody's going to eat them once you throw them in or get them dirty. Hachanami. So too in our case of ears, vishlikuta umiustututa. So that's the answer for our Mi'ista. That's the Mi'sata. That is the answer for Rabbi Yochanan. V'heicha itmar de Ravashi. We're saying, just like Ravashi said over there, he's going to say over here. Well, where did Ravashi say that? Aha. Damar Rabbi Avin bar Ravacham Rabbi Yitzchak. Abba Shul, Gevel, Shul Beit Rebbe Haya. He was the kneader for Beit Rebbe. You know, when you go to bake matzos, there's the person who is the kneader. Those are, they have special job. The person's a kneader. He was the kneader for Beit Rebbe. He used to knead the dough because Rebbe ate all of his items b'chulin ayidei tahara. So he wanted someone who was tahor to do this. Because once you add the water to the flour and you're going to knead it, he wanted somebody tahor to be involved with it. The hot water he used for his kneading of the dough, he used to heat that up with chitim shel trumat me'ah, with wheat kernels of something that was truma. Lalush beheni sabitara. And he'd still, with that, he was kneading dough that was tahor. Amai. Nechesh dilma ati behuli de takala. You have a problem. Maybe that the chitim tmeim are going to come into contact with the dough. Why don't we worry about that? Maybe they're going to eat them. Ravashi bishlikata umiyasata. Case where they're already boiled, and when you put them down, they're going to become disgusting. Since they're disgusting, nobody's going to come to contact with them, going to touch them, then touch the dough, because it ruins the food. So nobody's going to come in contact with them. So in that case, it's safe to use them. Now, how was Rebbe using Trumat Me'ah over here? Because Rebbe's not a Kohen. So how is he using Trumat Me'ah? Rashi claims that he bought it off Kohanim. Kohanim sold it for a cheap price, because it could only be used for burning under a tavshil. And he sold them, and then he used them. Tosafot says, no, the case is here that there were Kohanim in Beit Rabbi. And he was doing this, he's baking this on behalf of the Kohanim of Beit Rabbi. So as long as there's a Kohen who's benefiting from this item, even if Israelim are also benefiting from it, we allow it to go through because the Kohen is also a beneficiary over here. So Tosafot says it's a case where there's a Kohen that was a beneficiary. Rashi says it's a case where you purchased the Trumat Me'ah at a cheap price off of the Kohanim and then utilized it for himself. It seems to be that Tosafot would not agree with that position of Rashi, or may not accept that, say that you can use it, even if you purchased it, that you could use it solely for the purpose of a Yisrael. Although he never explicitly says he disagrees with Rashi, he does give another option, which seems to indicate that he does disagree with Rashi. Okay, we're going to stop over here.